600 UTC.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. President Salva Kiir is endorsed by SPLM members as the flag bearer of the party in 2024 proposed elections. And serious fighting continues in Sudan's Omdurman town for the second day.
We're facing some problems in the medical supplies. The hospital is running 24 hours emergency room. We have an ICU, dialysis, and theater.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, has vowed to hold elections at the end of South Sudan's transitional period in 2024. Mr. Kiir says he will work with the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement to ensure elections take place on time. For VOA News, William Sandemabor reports from Wau.
Of SPLM IG supporters at the stadium in Western Barlagazal State, Capital Wau, chanted slogan Tuesday praising President Salva Kiir during a rally to endorse President Salva Kiir as the party's presidential candidate in the next year elections. Addressing thousands of party supporters, President Kiir says there will be no more extension of the transitional period beyond 2024. Kiir welcomed his endorsement as his party's presidential candidate for the next year's elections.
I am deeply touched by your endorsement to be the SPLM flag bearer in 2024. Your continued support for our historic party gives me confidence that we will stand together as we go towards elections next year. It is also on this basis that I wholeheartedly accept your endorsement. This is your endorsement, and I have accepted it. For those who still doubt the SPLM unity, today, Barlagazal has spoken.
President Kiir says the country's governance system will change after the general elections. He says the current mandate of the transitional government of national unity ends in 2024, as stipulated in the country's roadmap.
As the party, let us work on the basis that there will be no extension of this transitional period. When it ends in 2024, let us not think of further extension. It will not be extended. We have to go for election so that people know themselves. We will work closely with the party to the agreement to put them in place and pave the way for election. That will put our country to the path of permanent stability.
President Salva Kiir said his conflict with the armed opposition drains the national resources for developing the country. He says he put an end to fighting across the country to give room for development in South Sudan.
Who takes away resources from service delivery? These were interrupted by the senseless war which we fought from 2013 to 2018. Its intensity stops implementation of government plans, and it is for these reasons that I signed the Vitalized Peace Agreement in 2008. I did not want it to continue, not because we were being defeated. I thought it was better to stop it from going ahead.
The president says his government will use the available resources to improve the living conditions of the South Sudanese.
We have initiated national projects. We have road construction going on in different parts of the country, including a highway that is coming here to Barlagal. It has already come to Rakeka, and it will come all the way to one year.
He appealed the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement to put aside the conflict-related plans and focus on the service delivery to South Sudanese. First Vice President Riek Machar did not attend the event for endorsing President Salva Kiir as the flag bearer of the Sudan People's Liberation Party in 2024 scheduled elections. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Wao.
From where we move to Omdurman, where medical workers in the Sudanese capital are risking their lives to save others as intense fighting between Sudan's army and paramilitary rapid support forces continue in Omdurman. Nabil Biagio reached out to Dr. Rashid Mukhtar, who is currently volunteering at Nawar Hospital in Omdurman and other primary health centers in the area. He says hospitals in his area are losing patients who come with gunshot wounds because of acute shortage of blood. He also says that some patients are unable to access health centers due to intense fighting.
We're facing some problems in the medical supplies. The hospital is running 24 hours emergency room. We have an ICU, dialysis, and theater. We've got also 2 days for cancer patients for chemotherapy. The most important issue here is the medical supply. We cannot get any supply from anywhere. We've got promises as well from the Ministry of Health, but it's not as much as we want, you know.
Yes, in the current context of the ongoing fighting and conflict in Sudan, what are the most frequent medical needs as far as patients coming to your hospital and no hospital and other hospitals that might be open around you? What are the emergency cases, the pressing cases that you deal with?
All the injuries between the civilians, either by weapons or by the Air Force's attacks. The most important item here is the blood needs. Most of the patients, they need the blood transfusion, and we don't have even, you know, the kits for blood transfusion. I mean, like the bags and the wires and et cetera. And we cannot get them from anywhere. I'm just using my relationships with some other colleagues in Al Saudi sometimes, some hospital around, you know, some private companies, but it's not enough. Most of the patients are dying because we can't give them any blood, to be honest. The dialysis patients as well, most of the dialysis centers has been closed or out of service, and no hospital is like one of two of centers in Omdurman itself, but every now and then, the dialysis kits are deficient, and we have stopped doing the dialysis, and we lost too many patients, you know, because we don't have dialysis kits. On the other hand, in the ER, we've got too many issues with, you know, the gauze and plates and everything that we can do to, like, to suture the patients, to the anesthesia, medications, everything. We don't have anything right now, to be honest with you. The situation is catastrophic. In the theater itself, our only one consultant, the surgeon, he stopped working as he wants, he wants some money, you know.
How long can you keep doing this without getting significant supplies and support from organizations and without the fighting, you know, calming down?
It's a very difficult question, to be honest. You know, we're doing our best to keep stand and keep giving the service to the patients. But believe me, if I can send you a video of today's situation, it's very bad, you know. We lost like five civilians fighting around the facility of the hospital. It's around, and the problem is most of the patients, they cannot get into the hospital itself because the fighting, they cannot stop fighting to let them go, you know.
As I understand, the current fighting in Omdurman, the area where you are, it's mostly about controlling supply routes for the RSF and the army. They're fighting to control the supply route to Wadi Saidna and other military bases and strategic locations.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You're right.
That's Dr. Rashid Mukhtar, a general physician currently volunteering at primary health centers around Omdurman. He spoke with Nabil Biagio from Omdurman earlier today. South Sudan's Minister of Transport has suspended 9 airlines for operating without legal documentations. The National Minister of Transport says the aircrafts, which belong to 4 airline companies, allegedly forged EUI country registrations of Tajikistan. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Madud Biaryel, South Sudan's Minister of Transport, says the 9 suspended aircrafts includes Allied Services, Eagle Enterprise, Icon Aviation and Fly African. Minister Biar alleged that the 4 aviation companies forged EY country registrations of the Tajikistan. The minister has directed South Sudan civil aviation authorities and all states' airport administrators to implement the suspension order. Kur Kwal is the director of Juba International Airport. Kwal says he has already responded to the minister order.
Yeah, we granted them. The minister brought the order and then we implement immediately. The minister ensure they have policymakers. So whatever they decided, we don't want this aircraft not to fly, then we grab it. If they release it, they will give us order again. This aircraft is released. You release it, then we release.
Kual says airport authorities are investigating the companies implicated in the alleged forgery.
Everything now it can be forged. Everywhere, and then give it to people. People will look like it is a true document. But if you just go deep, then this is where you will. And especially if you go to manufacturer, you will get those aircrafts were outdated long time ago, so they are not any longer operating. In that one, and they are deleted in their the fleet. There was one on backup last week was about to leave. So the minister said, no, you cannot leave. Where you will get your document, it will be investigated thoroughly until you confirm whether you are guilty or not guilty.
Jospat Waweru manages the Allied Aviation Company in Juba. He declined to comment on the ministerial order.
If you are not allowed to divulge company information like that, then so what to do? You can come to the office officially and then I will give that information.
An officer with the Icon Aviation said his company's boss was in a meeting with the authorities over the matter and the company is not ready to comment. Last month, South Sudan's Council of Ministers directed the Ministry of Transport to screen all planes operating in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, cases of looting increases in Sudanese cities. Find out why after the break.
Questions. The question today.
Can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from church. The father was like, for those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future.
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. World Health Organization says six counties in South Sudan's Unity State have reported cases of measles. The Unity State Health Director says the government and some non-profit organizations are conducting mass vaccination campaigns to control the spread of the disease. For VOA News, Lit Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
Laura Patrick Biden, WHO Appeal Coordinator in United States, said the suspected case of measles have increased last week.
You use what we call a case definition. So whoever fits into that case definition is listed as a case. So the numbers I'm giving you are listed. They're not confirmed by laboratory test. And as I said, there are over 150 cases now that have been listed.
Dr. Twol BM United State Health Director say Coach Gwit Rukane Rler, Menit, and Mayom County have recorded cases of the disease due to influx of the returnees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. He said the state health workers are working with aid agencies to vaccinate the children against the killer disease to control its spread.
We are doing vaccination among the returnees only, and this will support us in controlling the outbreak. We believe after some time with this intervention, cases will go down. To me, that is also not very bad when it comes to controlling the outbreak. Yes, it is increasing. But with the intervention, the vaccination that is happening, we are hopeful that it will be controlled very soon.
BM said the state health ministry and aid agency have so vaccinated more than 9,000 children at Roria Transit Camp for the returnees. Biden described the measles vaccination campaign as a mop-up exercise targeting the children aged between 6 months to 16 years.
The aim is that this campaign will halt the transmission of measles and safeguard the vulnerable population. In addition to measles vaccines, we also provide polio oral vaccines and COVID-19 to adults who are also returning or running to South Sudan because of the crisis.
He said vaccination campaign will also be carried out in Awil in northern Bargadale State and Rung in Apanal State. He added that the children who fled the conflict in Sudan will also be vaccinated against other diseases, including polio and COVID-19. For BOA News, I'm Lee Nyaja in Bintu, United States.
Still on issues to do with Sudan, a new report by Heritage for Peace, a nonprofit dedicated to preserving cultural artifacts in times of war, has detailed the destruction and looting of museums and cultural sites during Sudan's conflict. Meanwhile, parties outside Sudan are quickly drawing up plans to evacuate antiquities to safety. Henry Wilkins reports from Jemena, Chad.
Sudan has a rich cultural heritage dating back 3,000 years to the Kushite civilization, which built these pyramids near the town of Meroe and even ruled neighboring Egypt around 700 BC. Sudan's civil war, which started in April, is now threatening that heritage. Experts have confirmed this video on social media shows soldiers from the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces entering an archaeological laboratory in Khartoum that houses ancient mummies. The video alarmed museum directors in Sudan and other experts worldwide.
We are so worried that the damage of the war and the conflict is reaching these places. The bombing as well. For the universities, for the museums, have taken place in varied cities in Sudan, in particular in Khartoum and Jenina, Niala.
Some artifacts from Sudan are held safely in foreign collections, like this one at the British Museum. But a report published on June 28th by Heritage for Peace, a non-profit dedicated to preserving cultural artifacts in times of war, says those left behind in Sudan are at risk. An archaeologist who worked on the report says it confirms that a historical market was the latest cultural site to be damaged or destroyed.
What we just heard yesterday was the destruction of an old part of Omdurman Market. And this has been completely destroyed by fire. There are already a damage to the museums in Darfur region. Sultan Ali Dinar Museum has been damaged.
In downtown Khartoum, museums and other cultural heritage sites sit a few hundred meters from the country's military headquarters and intelligence services, the setting for intense fighting during the war. Experts say they've used satellite images to identify damage to these sites. Interested parties outside of Sudan are doing what they can to preserve the country's heritage. Salah Ahmed, the former director of Sudan's National Corporation for Antiquities and Museums, says he is training volunteers to evacuate the country's artifacts.
In case they feel there is a real threat to the museums, to prepare who is going to do the evacuation itself, how the objects can be handled, where are they going to be hidden? So we are now in this emergency situation.
Meanwhile, Heritage for Peace says that it's organising fundraising events at Western museums to help pay for more people on the ground, and that it's also tried lobbying Sudan's two warring sides at peace talks in Saudi Arabia.
That's what we tried to push on the negotiation table in Jeddah a few weeks ago. That heritage destruction is an issue required by the international law.
Ahmed says Merawi has more visitors than ever, as Sudanese citizens who rarely travel outside Khartoum head north to escape the fighting. Even this is causing damage to the site, he says, as volunteers are unable to manage the increased traffic. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Jemena, Chad.
The world witnessed a recorded hottest day on Tuesday. That's according to several climate scientists. North Africa has recently seen temperatures near 50 degrees Celsius. Paulo Chepi, a climate scientist and a lecturer at the Grantham Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at the Imperial College of London, tells VOA's Carol Van Damme yesterday's heat underscores how some areas will be more affected by climate change.
What happens is you have a certain change in the climate, but how that's experienced by people depends on how well a particular country or community is prepared to face with the impacts. And to give you one example, one of the great impacts of climate change is sea level rise. So the sea levels are rising globally. We've already had 20 centimeters of global mean sea level rise since the beginning of the 20th century, and that's set to continue. We expect at least another 30 centimeters or so by the end of this century, and that is a lot actually for coastal communities, and particularly in countries that are less able to equip themselves with the infrastructure to protect their coasts against rising seas and storm surges and so on. Maybe another one I can mention is, changes in the patterns of rainfall. So some regions are going to get drier, some are going to get wetter. And so you have risks associated with flooding on the one hand, but also droughts on the other hand. And that requires a solid water supply infrastructure. So you need to have the infrastructure in place to bring the water where it's needed. And again, countries are quite unequal in that respect.
Let's talk about just yesterday in North Africa. It was said that the temperature was recorded at 50 degrees Celsius. Oh, my gosh. I mean, how are people surviving in that kind of heat?
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, that points to the health impacts of climate change and particularly the hot spells that are becoming both more frequent and more intense. Just to give some context, scientists have calculated, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change specifically in their last assessment report, they calculated that for 1 degree of global warming, and we're already at beyond that, 1 degree Celsius of global warming, we're at 1.2 degrees currently, we expect a fivefold increase in the likelihood of an extreme heat wave that would have occurred only once in 50 years. So that's happening five times as often now. And at the same time, it's also more intense. So there are studies showing that some regions on the globe are likely to become, at least at certain times, inhabitable in a sense. You know, just being there will be a health hazard unless you have air conditioning and are in an air conditioned room.
It sounds to me that you're saying whole communities are going to have to move that don't have air conditioning. They're not like America. They don't have air conditioning where they can just, you know, if they don't have it in their own home, they can go to a shopping mall or something. They have no escape. So are these communities going to have to up and leave?
Well, unfortunately, I'm sure that one of the impacts of climate change, one of the more indirect impacts, will be mass migration. Or I think a lot of these impacts will be subtle in the sense that it's not always the case that the linkages are so clear, but you can expect, for example, that if in one region you're experiencing water stress and crop failures, that will add to the maybe existing political instability that's already ongoing. And so that will be an extra ingredient to the explosive mix that's already in place and might trigger civil wars or mass migration because of poverty and so on. So all of this is speculative, but I think it's not far-fetched to envisage that more migrations will happen as a result of climate change.
That's Paolo Cippi, a scientist with the Imperial College of London. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with Lomerica and the song Salam Ya Sudan. Listening to Lomerica and the song Salam Ya Sudan. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Ustasa Zainab, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Now a single was the SMR, your shop now.